ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hey, Tegan Taylor here from Life Matters. Do you rely on grandparents to help pay the bills or look after the kids? You're not alone. Life has gotten busier, more expensive, and grandparents are picking up the slack. This July on Radio National, The Grandparent Trap explores the changing role of grandparents in modern family life. The Grandparent Trap and much more on Life Matters. Search for Life Matters on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
In the high, dry mountains of the Atacama Desert, the largest digital camera ever built has started shooting a movie, a time-lapse movie of the entire sky. It's an epic film shoot with an epic timeline, starting now and finishing in 10 years. In the meantime, Australian astronomers are preparing for what this telescope might find. This is Lab Notes from ABC Radio National. I'm Jonathan Webb. Today I'm speaking with Dr. Anaïs Moeller, a senior research fellow at Swinburne University and leader of the FINK project with the Vera Rubin Observatory. Hi, Anaïs.
Hi, how are you?
Can you tell me a bit about this survey overall? It's called the LSST. What is it and why is it going to take 10 years?
Oh, it's an amazing survey. So LSST stands for the Legacy Survey of Space and Time. So as the name indicates, it will do a lot of things and very interesting things. So over 10 years, we will take images of a southern sky, and then we will take a time lapse. So imagine that you will see the same patch of the sky hundreds to thousands of times over 10 years. What can you see that is changing? How much deeper can you see if you take more images and add them together? So LSST is built to discover new things, from what could dark matter and dark energy be, to explosive stars, to understanding all the asteroids that are in our solar system, to understanding stars in our Milky Way.
Right. So it's regular snapshots of the entire southern sky over 10 years. How often do you get a full snapshot of the sky?
So every 3 nights, we will scan all the observable sky from Chile. And if you think about like the same patch of the sky, we will be imaging every couple of days to a week, the same patch. So it's pretty good resolution, huh?
And it's the biggest digital camera ever built, I gather, 32,000 megapixels in one image. What kinds of light is it looking at? Is it visible light, just like a much smaller and cheaper digital camera?
The camera is like 1,000 times a regular smartphone, if you have the top end of a smartphone.
Yeah, right.
So 3.2 gigapixels, so super high resolution camera. And we will be seeing in wavelengths that are very similar to our human eyes. So it's what we call optical wavelengths, from the near UV to the near infrared, just passing through what our eyes can capture. And also with a huge magnifying glass, because we are going to see things that we will never see with a human eye, because basically the telescope has a mirror that is 8 meter diameter. So imagine that size of a mirror gathering photons from very far away in the sky and putting them all together in a very beautiful high-resolution image.
How is this survey different from previous ones? Because this is something that astronomers do, right? They either point a big telescope at something specific or they do a big survey like this. But this one is special. How?
So this is very ambitious. We have never had a survey that maps the whole southern sky as deep, as good resolution as this will be. So this is unprecedented. We don't know what we're going to find.
Work is happening in the meantime, right? If in these recordings something changes, people can already start studying it. How does that work?
So one of the interesting things about Rubin is it's in Chile. So when the night ends in Chile, the night starts in Australia. And we have amazing facilities here in Australia that can take snapshots of the same objects that are changing in Australian territory and give much more information of what type of exploding star it could be or phenomena. So what we do is we take images, we compare it to an old image, kind of a spot the difference that you had in the newspapers and magazines, and you find things that are changing brightness. And those things, our changing brightness, will be sent to what we call brokers. And brokers are collaborations and projects that receive that data and process it and then help it to the community. So think one of my projects is actually doing this, is receiving those informations of things changing in the sky within minutes of observations. And then we process it and then we make that data public.
Nice. So you're a broker, Anaïs.
Yes.
But like the nerdiest kind of broker because you're trading data.
Exactly. I am not wearing a suit right now. I am very simply trading data that is public and that comes from a telescope. I think it's a pretty cool thing to be an astronomical broker.
And how do you look for changes? You mentioned you're able to send out some of these alerts within minutes. I'm guessing that's not humans poring over the images every, you know, hour of the night.
No, we don't have a team of little ants looking at the images. Actually, what's interesting now with Rubin and this amount of data is that technology is linked to astronomy. In the sense, we have a whole system of engineers in Think that we use distributed computing, machine learning, all these big fancy words that you hear in industry, but apply to astronomical data. So we treat the data when it comes in, it's around 10,000 detections for every image. We treat it within a minute. We cross-match it to see if it's something known. We give machine learning probabilities and AI probabilities. And then we select the things that are most interesting for different people, and the community chooses these, and we communicate them. So these are very fancy technologies that we're using just to deal with the data volumes, because we're talking about 1 terabyte of data every night. So if you think about it, if you have a state-of-the-art computer or a laptop, if you had all that data for a given night, you will probably, your computer will be full. Your hard disk couldn't accept any more data. So how do we do this analysis is using these new technologies.
Extraordinary. I mean, you'd need decent broadband as well to be sucking down a terabyte of data every night. 10,000 detections in a single image. Is that what you said?
Yes, and 7 million every night.
Holy moly.
For 10 years.
Yeah.
So think about it. 1 terabyte, which is 7 million of alerts, these push notifications that you would have in your cell phone or your computer will be arriving, 7 million, 1 terabyte of data every night for 10 years.
I'd probably turn my phone off after night one, I think. And where does it go? I mean, data storage is quite a big conversation at the moment. Where does the data go after it comes down from the telescope?
Yes, so the data is processed in the US and part in France. But for the brokers, that is the project that I'm taking Think, we have a data analysis center in France, in a supercomputing center. It's called Lyon, the city. Mm-hmm. And we have storage there and also capability to analyze the data there. So you really need supercomputers to actually analyze this type of data fast enough.
What sorts of questions do you aim to answer with these surveys?
Oh, this is very interesting. So for me in particular, I'm interested about the fundamental composition of our universe. We know that the universe is made of matter like us and light. That's 5% of the universe. And then you have 25% is matter that we call dark because we cannot see it, but we can see its effect in the universe, how gravity pulls. And then we have almost 70% of our universe is something called dark energy. We call it dark because we don't know what it is, and we call it energy because it's pushing space apart. So it's making the universe stretch. Like imagine that you have like a textile or a napkin and you're stretching it out. It's the same that is happening with our universe. And right now we have some potential ideas of what could dark energy be, but we need observations to confirm whether this theory is right or the other one is right. And Rubin will allow us to actually map that expansion of the universe and figure out which type of theory we should be looking at. So for me, that's pretty amazing. I think one of the things that is the most interesting to ask the question, but we don't know the answer, is what will we find that we haven't expected to find? And I think that's the biggest question and the hardest one, because we have so much data that how do you look for something new? that you haven't expected. So this is where anomaly detection is, things that are absolutely unexpected.
Yeah. Well, fingers crossed for some very exciting anomalies, Anais.
Thank you. I am hoping for many of them. So next time we talk, I will tell you all about them.
Thanks so much for sharing your lab notes with me.
No, though. Thank you for having me.
Dr. Anais Müller is a senior research fellow at Swinburne University of Technology. This episode of Lab Notes was made on Gadigal and Ngunnawal and Ngambri country. It was produced by Amy Briggs, and I'm Jonathan Webb. I'll catch you next week.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.